Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year, here's The Drive.
Very deep. Shoot! Oh, Tyson Berry! Oh, my goodness! Top shot, baby! Gerard feeds it off. Shows down low. We're ready to score! Eric Johnson! Down the right wing. Eric Johnson on the slot. Eric Johnson, the drive. He scores! The Condor! He scores again! The Avs have won it overtime.
The great Mark Mosier on Altitude. Great job, Mosh. We love hearing the calls, and we love that the Avalanche are in the playoffs. It's D-Mac with Troy Rank at Blake Street Tavern with the Yeti tailgate party cranking away with Coors Light. Coors Light Beer Garden is flowing. Burgers, hot dogs on the grill, cornhole. Everybody's in a great mood. The Avalanche are in the playoffs. Everybody's excited. We'll have a sold-out crowd at Pepsi for the Nuggets, and it is awesome that the Rockies could start opening day by killing the Dodgers. What a breathtaking view of baseball today with the Rockies just manhandling the LA Dodgers. Troy, it's been they're losing 9-1. I couldn't help myself, Troy. I was on a roll. Everything was incredibly positive.
They are getting boat raced today. They can't keep the ball in the yard. Bellinger has a home run. Russell Martin has a home run.
Muncy
has a home run and a triple. Tyler Anderson has a double.
A pitcher.
Yeah, it's been a tough day. These days happen, but it just stinks because they hit 197 on the road trip. You want to come home and give fans a reason to get excited, and nothing makes baseball more boring than a lack of offense,
yeah,
ever. Because
yeah,
the crowd can't get into it. And it's just like, every time, even when I coach the team, they're like, your guys look flat. I'm like, we're not scoring runs. It's hard to have energy when you don't score. And they've got one run. I mean, they were shut out twice on the road trip. They barely won that one game against Tampa with, 2-1,
yeah,
right?
I mean, so they won 1-0. They had a day off. They scored one run today. They went like 22 innings without a run. They went 40 innings with a run. Then you got another. So we're talking about, golly, we're talking about close to 50 innings with three runs, Troy?
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
Yeah,
yikes. Exactly.
50 innings, three runs? I mean, and today, bases loaded, can't come through. First and third, no outs, can't come through. Bases loaded, two outs, can't come through. It looks like Charlie's going to bloop one into left field, and there's runners on first and second. I mean, I don't know. It's well, this would be an opening day miracle, wouldn't it, Troy?
Well, you'd least like to, if you're going to lose, you'd like it to be 9-6. You know what I mean? Like, get momentum going into tomorrow's game.
But here's another great freaking example, live in person as we're talking about it. Runners on first and second, and you get tricky here because you get into the wheelhouse of all these baseball teams with their relief pitching, where it seems like teams never have a chance down more than two runs when they get to a certain point of the game because the relief pitching is so strong. I'm not sure we're quite there yet with the Dodgers, but we're darn close. And the patience level will probably be pretty short in this circumstance. But this is a spot where David Dahl, we need you, David Dahl.
Well, their pen's not great. The one thing with the Dodgers, I mean, Jensen, remember, you hate to see this, but he had the heart issue here, yep, in Denver last year. He hasn't pitched particularly well in Colorado the last couple years. Their bullpen's vulnerable. I mean, they're good, but they're vulnerable. But you've got to put pressure on them. And that means get it to 9-3 with second and third and no outs. That they keep, every time they get runners on base, they can't put the ball in play.
Oh, my gosh. I think the thing that kills me, now this goes to, by the way, nice week for both of our sons in terms of the statistical categories. Troy Rank and I are crushing it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I have nothing to do with it. All I do is...
What? You got to take full credit, Troy. Come on.
I take zero. I feed batting practice meatballs. That's about it.
Anyways, what kills me, and we're both big baseball dads as well as coaches on the youth level, but have followed baseball our whole lives. What kills me is when you're up an account and you get a hittable pitch and you just look at it. Because it tells me you're mentally just, you're just not quite locked in on something. So when David Dahl at 1-0 gets a low inside pitch, to me, I'm like, why don't you take that and just deposit it on the rooftop? Like, what is going on in your head that you don't see that that's a strike and a hittable pitch?
Because he's eliminated pitches and he's looking for one pitch. So pitch down and in wasn't the pitch he was looking for. He was probably looking for something out over the plate, so he takes it. So, because that's what major league players do when they get into those counts. They eliminate pitches and locations and say, one pitch, one spot. The thing that's hurt Dahl is he's swinging through chest-level fastballs. He's gotten big. And then... And then they strike him out on the curveball in the dirt.
I'll give you a... You know, I'm not saying you're wrong. I support you there. But I would take that at bat as an example. His head's just not... He's not seeing it for some reason.
He's pressing.
Because he had a hittable pitch at 1-0. I don't know why you're not looking for a low inside fastball. To me as a lefty, that's the moneymaker right there. You let that one go. I don't know. How did he get a second strike?
He swung through a high fastball.
All right, and then
what do you do? You change eye level, next one, curveball in the dirt, and he strikes out. But he's pressing. He looks like a guy who's squeezing the lumber out of the wood bat.
Right.
Because normally he takes one of those pitches, so he's a 3-1 count. Instead, every count he's got into favorable, he swings himself out of the count. The only guy that's shown patience into bad pitches is Nolan.
He's it.
That's what I'm saying then. Why are you ever going to pitch to him? Would they pitch to him? They probably will, but because it's 9-1.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Well, I bet they try to bait him. They're just going to nibble, 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 nibble.
It'll be interesting. There's runners on second and third. There's nobody on first. There's one out. Will Nolan Arenado get a pitch to hit the rest of the way?
If it's a strike, it's going to be small brush painted strike. I can't imagine he gets anything that he likes. They just try to see if they can bait him.
Right, and this is where Oh, wow.
See where that's up and in? That's not up, but it's in.
That's pretty hittable, though. That wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. So they're challenging. I see what you're saying, though. It certainly wasn't over the plate.
Right. They're going to give him just enough where it looks good, but it's not like it's not your hot zone.
But this is where this year you can sort of see what's going to come. Either Nolan Arenado, first of all, he's got to drive. If he gets the pitch to hit with a runner on third and less than two outs, you know, he's got to drive this run in, okay? But more importantly is the next batter, Trevor Story, Troy, that's got to come through as well. Yeah, and now, see, this is what happens.
Now he expands his zone because he feels like he has to carry the lineup.
Because they're not going to pitch to me.
Right. Now he feels like if I don't get a hit, we don't score runs. And so the natural tendency as a hitter is to expand your strike zone.
So this is where, as a manager, you have to say, stop. You can't be this desperate. Like, what are you doing? We got to trust Trevor Story. And I bet there's mumbling where Nolan's like, how can I trust him right now?
Well, he trusts him, but today Trevor's having a tough day. See, he hasn't, by the strike zone, Subaru strike zone they show on the game, he hasn't received one strike,
right,
and yet it's a 2-2 count.
Right, but that shows you, so we were right. This is the approach they were going to take to him in this particular at bat. And this is what let me ask you this. He has to mentally get ready for this the whole year. How do you think Nolan will settle with this approach to him the whole year?
How do you think what?
How do you think he'll mentally handle?
He'll be fine. Because they're going to hit enough around him with, and it's a double for Nolan. No, boom, that's a single. He gets the RBI, but that's the difference right there.
That is a huge, you got to be kidding me. Charlie O'Dahl.
How does he get thrown out in a 7-1
game?
Are you
kidding me?
My word.
Are you nuts?
But my point is, that's the difference with why Nolan is a superstar. He fought through 6 bad pitches, muscles a ball to left field on a single, gets the run home, gets the bat head through. He got jammed a little bit. He still finds a way to execute. I don't know why Charlie's going here.
Wow.
How many outs are there? One or
no? There was one out. And you got Story coming up. You'd have a runner on third. It was a high throw. Did he get under? Nope, he's out.
He's out. Hit
he's
him in
definitely
the knee.
Out. And frankly, it wasn't all that close. And it wasn't even a good throw. That is terrible. Wow. I don't even know what to say. You're down by so many runs. You go station to station, and you just got to put it together. So, wow. Third base coach fault.
if he sent
it. What is wrong with Charlie Black?
Well, it's just he just slowed down. He's gotten older. People forget he's in his 30s because he got up to the big leagues late.
Did he say three years ago?
Yes. He just slowed down a little bit. I didn't see the replay. I got to believe he got a bad jump and or a bad read because that ball was in the air forever to left field. And he hits a home run.
Look at this. And Trevor Story
hits a home run.
I mean, crushes one, which is awesome. Which is awesome. Good for Trevor Story.
It should be 9-4.
Well, that's a two-run homer, but it should be 9-5.
It should be 9-5 where you could bring the
time. It should be 9-5 with one out, not 9-4 with two outs. That is, boy. All right, let's compare it. That is death by inches right there, my man. That is, first of all, it's just bad baseball, unnecessary.
It's just unnecessary. I always, like, if you're going to go home there, you got to be safe. And like you said, it wasn't even a good throw, and he was out. I have to see the replay, but I'm guessing that Charlie got a bad read or he grounded the bag wide because you can't be out there.
Nice to see Trevor Story.
Plus, I wonder,
take one deep for sure.
I wonder, D-Mac, if they know they switched Jock Peterson into left. He has a plus arm. You're not running on Jock Peterson there. I'm sorry. That's a mistake.
That's on coaching right there.
Well, it's either coaching or he ran through a sign.
We have to go back and see.
He might have run through a sign. I didn't see the stop sign up, but usually the third base coach in the big leagues drops way down into like 30 feet down, so he puts the stop sign up. It didn't look like there was a stop sign, but man. Hey, at least there's a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
9-4.
Right, they've scored three runs here, and the bottom of the seventh, so they're making it a little bit more interesting. People are rushing back into the stadium. I'm joking. I don't think you're allowed to do that. Well, I don't know. We can hold our breath and maybe something dramatic will happen. And we welcome you to the show. We know that you saw... Oh, there, Sal. There's a typical guy. He just gave up.
He just gave up,
didn't you, Sal? He just gave up, came back. Came back to the bar. I see what you're doing. Right, yeah. Okay. It's all right. The bar's open. You can come on back. You can give up and watch the rest of the game here. That's fine. But it is funny, Troy, when you sit down, here's what we're doing today, and we thank you for listening, is we're literally like breaking down the minutiae of a baseball game. But to me, this is what makes a baseball game freaking awesome. This is why I love baseball, because every situation literally changes with every pitch, Troy, and the nature of second guessing, of course, is inherent with baseball. You can't have baseball without massive amounts of second guessing left and right.
That's the beauty of it. Beauty of it is there's so many inner chess moves that you can second guess.
Right.
Football, I mean, unless you know the plays or the scheme, it's hard to second guess what the options were because we don't know when they go to the line what the three plays are. Baseball, it all plays out in front of you. That's one of the reasons I love covering it. Is in many ways I say that it's a solo performance in a concert. It's in many ways an individual sport, and it plays out in front of you. Other than a missed sign, like we're saying maybe Charlie ran through a sign, if a guy hits it to second and he misses, whose fault is it? Second base.
Right.
It's not, the first baseman was yelling at him and audible. You know it plays out in front of you in black and white. So that's one of the beauties of baseball.
The frustrating part, and see, the great thing about baseball players at this level, they know all this stuff. You know, they sit there and they're professionals, Troy. They've been through hundreds of these situations in real life. They know when they've screwed up, and they know when they've left opportunities out there. They don't have to be reminded about it. They know it. What concerns me right here, of course, and I looked at it as the approach of David Dahl. That's concerning. And we have talked quite often how important he actually has to be to the team.
Well, exactly.
We got to find out why they sent. I mean, I guess you would ask Bud Black what happened with Charlie Blackmon. Was he sent or did he go through the sign? How do you feel about him making that decision in a game that you're down by 8 runs?
Right.
I mean, the standard way, listen, when you're in a baseball game and you're down a bunch of runs, the way you basically coach it is, guys, it is what it is. We're going station to station. Your run just doesn't mean that much. You can't hit a 7-run home run. So you just play it, Troy, way more conservative. You have to. It's your only chance to get back into the ball game. You just cannot afford to run into outs.
Yeah, unless, you know, your fastest guy's running, he's going to make it easily.
Well, but that's a judgment call.
Right.
There's no way.
It's always going to be a close play.
There's no way Charlie Blackman is your fast. I don't even know what Charlie Blackman's speed is anymore, Troy. I mean, you tell me. What kind of?
I mean, I would say he's probably average to below average.
And that's your leadoff guy.
Because he's a unique player. He's power at the leadoff spot. He hits doubles. You don't have to be fast when you hit doubles and triples and home runs.
Who's the plus speed on the Rocket? Not Nolan. He is maybe the slowest guy.
Trevor Story's their fastest player. It's not even close. He's one of the fastest players.
Faster than Hampson?
Yes, by far. Trevor's one of the fastest players in the major league.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, you can't have him lead off. Because no, you got to have guys on base.
Yeah, he strikes out too much. And he's a power guy.
Desmond, no.
No. They don't really have. That's why with LeMahieu was kind of a quasi. He's not a runner, but he gets on a lot. There's not a lot of
Let me ask you in this situation. Why not have somebody run for Charlie Blackman in that situation in the seventh inning?
Still, because you're trying to come back. You're still trying to come back. And if you think that.
You don't think Charlie Blackman's about to do something so stupid.
Well, you'd never think he's going to get thrown out there. You don't want to take that bat out of the lineup in the seventh inning.
No, I agree. It's just, hey, listen, maybe we'll look like fools here because McMahon will just hit a home run, and then they'll get that fifth run, and that's all you really promise anyways, and maybe it'll be okay. And he takes a walk. I don't know, Troy, crazier things that happen in Coors Field, that's for sure.
Listen, if you can get the tying run to the plate at Coors in the last inning, you never know. I mean, again, Jansen's had his issues here. This is not an easy place to close out a game.
Okay. All right. I mean, there's seven more outs to go, Troy. So, all right, let's just play this game. You're Bud Black. All of a sudden, it's interesting. Where's your approach in terms of your bullpen?
Well, you're using guys you wouldn't use when you're winning, so they use DJ Johnson. You stay with guys like that. You ride
that horse home, you don't.
Yeah, well, you stay with those guys. You don't burn Wade Davis. You don't burn Scott Oberg. You might have to burn between O and Oberg if it gets to like 9-7. One of them's going to be in. But you try to stay away from. You have guys you use when you're tied and winning and guys you use when you're losing. And so you try to hold back your 7th, 8th, and 9th guy in games that you're losing because you need. Here's the problem. You pitch him tonight, and then tomorrow it's 4-3 in the ninth inning, and Davis threw 32 pitches.
Right.
And then you're like, why did we use him in a game that was 9-6?
Right.
So that's why they have rules.
So a little, hey, here's a game for you. Borderline major league pitcher, right? Like guy who's kind of hanging in there. It's time for you to go.
Yeah, my son's in pitching now. He's for UCCS. He just came into the game.
Oh, your son's in a good spot with his team, with the... What are you guys, the Bobcats?
Mountain Lions.
Sorry. Mountain Lions up 13-7 in the eighth.
Oh, he's already got two outs, but I don't know if he was already in.
Look at that crafty lefty from Longmont. Just dealing.
Longmont High Trojans.
Making everybody proud. Well, that's baseball, that's for sure, in terms of what the Rockies are going to do this season. By the way, we should say, how about this? We will have the Rockies game on Sunday night on The Fan, as we are a ESPN affiliate, and we have Sunday Night Baseball, and the Rockies, Troy, help me out here. When was the last time the Rockies were featured on Sunday Night Baseball?
2001. I covered that game. I'm
what?
Pretty sure it was started by Pedro Estacio. I know I covered that game. I'm 100% certain I covered that game.
How in the world, Troy, as he watches his son pitch skillfully out of the inning, the Mountain Lions taking it to Adams State in what was a close game.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a second. Did he just give up a triple?
I don't know if it was a triple.
Sorry. I thought it was a pop fly. They were running off the field. He was backing up the base.
I couldn't tell.
Sorry about that.
What happens? It's the life of a relief pitcher. Trust me. We live it.
Why has it been so long for the Rockies off of Sunday Night Baseball?
Well, it's a joke that they're in nobody's time zone. They're the only team in this time zone, so that's a problem. They were so bad for basically from 2001 through 2006, and then again from 2010 until a couple years ago. So they weren't a draw at all, and that's part of it. But now they're better. I mean, that's really the issue, is they're better. They're better now. That's why they're in it.
All right.
So he did get two outs. He did get two outs. I missed him. I'm watching him pitch. He came in the eighth in a clean inning, so he got the first two guys to fly out. So I'm watching my son on the computer, watching the Rockies here, and we're trying to worry about which guys from the AAF the Broncos are signing. Can we get a little more esoteric around here?
I tell you what, here's what we have coming up.
He just got the strikeout,
D-Mac. Earlier we talked to Devontae Bousby. He got the strikeout.
He got the strikeout.
There you go.
So we talked to our guy. He was great. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's a crazy – here's a list, Troy, if you bring up the AAF, and we'll see what Ian Desmond does here on 2-1 while he's swing and miss. Keith Reeser, and I'm not expecting anybody to know these guys, but he goes to the Chiefs. This is all from the AAF. Wide receiver Rashad Ross goes to the Panthers. Quarterback Garrett Gilbert gets signed by the Browns. That's interesting. Have fun competing against Baker.
Garrett Gilbert.
Duke Thomas goes to the Vikings. Safety Deron Smith goes to the Vikings. And Devontae Bousby goes to the Broncos. Desmond goes down, and maybe so do the hopes of the Rockies here, as we think they probably should have got a fifth run. Trevor Story goes deep, but getting thrown out of the plate was Charlie Blackmon in a situation where you're down by 8 runs, and you got to question that logic.
I bet you a soda that fewer than 5 guys from the AAF make opening day NFL rosters.
5?
5. I'll bet you a soda.
You're going to take the, you're pushing me to the over?
You have to take the over.
Sure. I'll throw that soda your way. By the way, on kind of another sports dark moment, he's 50. Craig Carton was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison today.
That's your college buddy, right?
He was my college buddy. We worked together on KBPI in 1999.
Oh, that's right. He was here in Denver.
Before he was with me on KBPI, he was a host on The Fan. He went on to do a variety of things, but he's most famously known for hosting at WFAN after Don Imus left to be on with Boomer Esiason. Craig has come out in a New York Post article admitting a severe gambling addiction, which put him millions of dollars in debt, which made him create scenarios where he was going to be a ticket broker, but he just lied to everybody, manufactured documents, purported frauds to obtain millions of dollars, not for purchasing and selling tickets, but to actually just pay off gambling debts.
So it's like a Ponzi scheme with tickets, right? He was just going to tell people, I'm getting you these tickets, and eventually he couldn't produce the tickets,
He lied to a lot of people, but he only defrauded a couple people. However, the couple people that he defrauded, Troy, he defrauded out of millions of dollars. So it wasn't some sort of, I'm putting old people out on the street with their investments, Bernie Madoff, but it's fraud nevertheless. And he has admitted to massive gambling issues, and he was sentenced today to 3.5 years in prison and a significant amount of community service, that sort of thing. He also admitted that he's had a legal separation for his wife,
really?
Kim, who I know.
You probably know. She was
I do know Kim. She was, a Philly girl and not a Syracuse girl. But they led an incredibly lavish lifestyle. Private helicopters, jets, unbelievable home. I mean, just preposterous. And he was making a lot of money at WFAN, but not that kind of money. And so today, he's claiming he's just a gambling addict. And the court could have sentenced him to 45 years. They asked for 7 years. And the judge literally said, when she addressed Craig Carton today, first time, long time.
No, she didn't.
She goes, I'm Maria from Queens, first time, long time, when she initially addressed him today.
And then sentenced him?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cold. That is sea breeze in an open wound. Hey, let me rub your shins with a cheese grater, and then I'm going to massage it with sea breeze.
I'm about to send you to prison, first time, long time.
First time, long time.
So there's that moment, too. When we come back, Devontae Bousby, what was it like to be part of the defunct AAF and get a shot with the Broncos? We'll hear his story. We'll see if the Rockies can mount a comeback. We're live from the Blake Street Tavern on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year, here's The Drive.
All right, we appreciate it having Pedro Gomez of ESPN joining us right now. Pedro, thanks for being here. Tough day for Rockies fans so far, unless they can rally a massive ninth inning comeback. They're down 9-4 going into the top of the ninth. Kadrich, tell me a little bit about the Dodgers. Like, what are you expecting out of the Dodgers this year?
I think the Dodgers are still going to be a very good team. I saw them all spring. They still have a very talented roster. There's a lot of people that believe they may have added by subtraction in terms of Yasiel Puig, maybe Matt Kemp no longer being there. So, yeah, time will obviously tell, but I can tell you that inside the clubhouse, it was a pretty good vibe that they had all spring long, and it's not a swagger, so to speak, but just a confidence level that comes from winning six straight division titles in a row.
The Rockies, they got a homer out of Trevor Story today. That's only their third of the year. The Dodgers have three runs today. Can you explain or understand the power outage that has impacted the Rockies here early in the season?
I mean, a lot of it has to do with the fact that they were in Florida and they faced a very, very good and talented Tampa Bay pitching staff.
Okay.
That is one of the better pitching staffs in all of baseball. So, take into account who you're going up against. In terms of the home, the offense being in a power outage, hey, they've only played not even a full game at Coors Field yet. And normally the numbers are very good at home. I think that we need more than eight innings for a sample size before people start jumping off the ledge.
Yeah, but we're fans, Pedro. That's what we do. We hype things up and then we overreact. That's especially on opening day. All right, let me ask you a bigger overarching question. The importance of opening day. Do you think it actually matters how you perform on home openers?
Absolutely not in terms of how the season will be dictated. No. I remember in 2002, the Giants got absolutely shellacked on opening day. And, they went and played into Game 7 of the World Series that year. So as much as is there so much hype and everybody wants the home club to do very well,
right,
the reality is that it does not indicate what type of season you're going to have. But it is disconcerting as a fan. I totally, totally get it. But let's pump the brakes a little.
Hey, Pedro, where do you stand on pitchers hitting? Where are you on that topic?
I like pitchers hitting, but I fully realize that it is going to go away.
Okay.
By the time the 2022 season starts, when the next collective bargaining agreement will be in place, I fully expect there to be DHs everywhere.
Okay, and explain to our audience and to me why we have to wait like that, and what is in the collective bargaining agreement that shapes up like that. Why?
Well, it's a money issue. Salaries will go up, and so therefore the National League clubs, the players are going to want it. And the National League clubs are going to bend, but they're going to want something back, like every time that there is bargaining that goes on. And that's what the collective bargaining agreement is. It's a bargained agreement between the players and the league. So, the players are going to want it. It's going to be 15 more jobs for sluggers, so to speak, in baseball. And the owners are going to say, okay, we'll give you this, but we're going to want something back in return. And that's why you have to wait and negotiate this through the CBA.
Do you know any major league managers that actually like it? Pitchers hitting?
Yeah, Bruce Bochy does.
Really?
He likes it because
why?
Of the strategy involved. Because it dictates the other team is going to have to make a move. And I remember talking to Bruce Bochy, and one of the things he always said is, look, a pitcher gets upset when I have to pull him maybe in the fifth inning because his spot's coming up
right in
the lineup. And his response is, hit better and I won't have to take you out.
Well, that's
so
ridiculous,
work on your craft.
Work on your craft. He can't get in a time machine and go back to when he was 14 years old when he was made a P.O. by his club baseball team to take more at bats. Or you talk about the Latin guys, they get in the baseball academies when they're 15, 16, and it's like, you're a pitcher. And they don't pick up a bat ever again in their lives. So, I mean, that's fascinating.
It's tough, but you know, he was fortunate enough to have somebody like Madison Bumgarner, who can hit. So,
okay.
You know, Madison always made it an easy decision. If the game is close and his spot's coming up, Bochy's like, you're hitting.
Yeah, you know what? You know, Pedro, I will go with that. The second I see Mad Bum be a pinch hitter in a clutch situation when Bochy actually puts him in. When that moment happens, we'll take it from there. But
I think he has used him as a pinch hitter in extra innings before.
And what, in the 14th inning? 15th inning?
Yeah,
something
you
like
know,
that?
His bench is empty, but he was the guy that was called on to get out there and pinch hit.
Hey, let me give you one more. Do you ever envision a scenario, and I know they've experimented it, and in youth baseball they call it the California tiebreaker, and they did do it in spring training as well. Can you see a situation sort of like 3-on-3 in overtime for hockey, where they start an inning with a runner on second in extra innings?
Well, it happens right. It's happening right now in the minor leagues.
Right.
But again, this is a collectively bargained issue, and I personally don't believe it will happen. Not at least in the 10th inning. Look, if it ever does come to the major leagues, I think it's something that would happen maybe in the 12th or 13th inning, not in the 10th or 11th inning. No.
Okay. All right, fair enough. All these things on the table. Well, because, listen, nobody really likes a 15-inning game, by the way. Not really. You know, it really kills managers. They've made rule changes now about position players even pitching, right? I mean, you know, it's going in that direction where at some point you just got to get the game over because it's just going to stress everybody out. No, nobody's in the stands, Pedro. You know, it's just kind of a goofy thing to watch at 1 o'clock in the morning on TV if, you know, you have a fight with your wife. But other than that, it's really not a positive, you know, for anybody. That's all. That's it. Pedro, we appreciate it.
Well, you're right. We saw the NFL went to ties after 10-minute overtime.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably coming at some point. And you know what? Ties might not be the worst thing in the world for a
baseball team. Oh, wait a second. No, that is terrible. No, we can't have ties.
it might. You know what? It might not be the worst thing in the world.
Can you really envision that? Really, seriously.
Yeah, and the reason being, it would force teams to move. Let's do something to try to score right now instead of, oh, we're just going to kick back, wait for the 11th inning, wait for the 12th inning, wait for the 13th. If there's a situation where a game is going to be tied after 12, you might see a lot more action being put in play by managers.
You know what? I'd actually be okay with that, too. Either a tiebreaker, you know, guy on second, or I like that. I actually do like that because it does force the action. And the inherently what kills any sport, Pedro, in my vision, is being boring, right? We just can't be boring. That's inherently why I hate pitchers hitting, because it's boring. They strike out most of the time. If a miracle happens and they get on base, they don't really run anything out. There's no challenge to anything. And it's just boring. More than anything. So
empathy is the worst thing that could be attached to any sport.
Right, right. All right, Pedro, appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for chiming in here on opening day.
All right, take care.
All right, the Rockies are in the top of the 9th, and they are down 9-4, and now the Dodgers, well, they don't stop. They have runners on first and second with no outs, and we'll catch up with opening day live here at Blake Street Tavern on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year, here's The Drive.
One drive.
Thank you for being on with us, and congratulations. What was yesterday like for you being signed by the Broncos?
Yesterday was phenomenal. The Broncos is actually my uncle's favorite team, so growing up, I always heard about the Broncos, so that was fun for him. But yesterday was phenomenal. Nice for Fangio, Donatell, and my former teammate, Bryce Callahan as well.
You've got to tell us what the final days of the AAF were actually like. We've heard some crazy stories over the past 24 hours. What was it like for you maybe over the past 48 hours as the league folded?
So throughout the year, you always kind of hear rumors of this, rumors of that, and you know, you had new ownership. But I really didn't read too much into it. I really didn't pay too much into it. So the day that we did get the league suspended and everything, I heard speculations in the locker room, but I didn't really pay too much into it because I heard things all year, and they kept making a way, they kept finding a way, so I didn't think much of it. So we were practicing, then the general manager, he came and cut practice short, gave us the bad news, and, you know, it was kind of on from there.
All right, I really am curious about the specifics. Like, what point of practice were you in? Because I'm assuming, like, when he made the news, practice must have ended, right, wherever it was.
Oh, so, yeah, we're at the Alamo Dome practicing, and we were already an hour in the practice, probably had another hour to go, and he just gave some news, and everything was cut short. And I'm hearing a lot of stories about other teams are stranded, this, that, and other. I'm not really sure if that's true or not. I only can speak of the San Antonio Commanders, and the Commanders, the team consisted of 52 players, and 45 of them was from Texas, so as far as flights and all that mess, that wasn't a big old deal. Everybody's from Texas, except a handful of us, and as far as our place of stay, we're not supposed to report out until next week, so everybody's still good to go as far as the Commanders. Now, any other team, I'm not sure what their things were.
All right, so crazy, you're an hour into practice. Well, we don't practice anymore, it's done. You go in and change. When does your phone ring that the Broncos are interested?
Well, so I didn't hear from NFL team until the day we got cleared, which is yesterday. So we officially wasn't cleared till yesterday to speak to NFL teams. So that's when I started hearing from a handful of teams. And when I heard about the Broncos, I got excited because of Fangio and Donatello. So that's kind of how that played out.
Devontae, Troy Rank here. Thanks for joining us again. You had a spectacular season in the interrupted AAF.
Yeah.
You led him in interceptions. A couple of quick questions for you. One, what is your 40 time? We've heard talk of 4.2. What did you run in the combine? What do you remember about that? And I look at your profile. You played four games with Chicago with Coach Fangio, right? Is that what brought you here to Denver? Because I heard from sources yesterday you had 7 or 8 teams interested. So how fast are you and why the Broncos?
I'm a low 4.4 guy at my pro day. The 4.22 that I've been seeing online. My pro day was very windy, so I've been hearing things.
That's all right.
I ran a 1.80 4.2. I'm not sure about that, but I'm a 4.4 guy, and my final decision did come to Denver though because of the head coaches, and I love Donatell. I love what Donatell did with me in Chicago, and Fangio, he's a mastermind up there with what he did defensively in Chicago, so I know he's going to bring that to Denver, and Denver's going to be a great team because of those guys.
Well, my guess, Devontae, is you love the AAF. I mean, the AAF really helped you, I assume, even though you have definitely had your time in the NFL. So what?
I love the city of San Antonio and the organization, the Commanders organization, top to bottom, from Moose to Bob to my coaches, Bradley and everybody. I'm very, very proud of them. I'm fortunate out there we got the opportunity to be around my teammates. It's a great group of guys. We're a really good team. Got some athletic guys in the organization. So I love the opportunity they gave for me, and I'm back where I want to be. So I'm very appreciative of that.
What was your role on the Eagles the year they won the Super Bowl?
So that year was my practice squad year. I've been in the league 4 years, but 2017 was the only year I wasn't active. And my role was to come in and do what I had to do on the practice field, in the film room and everything. And I was being a good teammate, and then just whatever was asked of me, I did it. So that year was a phenomenal year. I loved that year, and I learned a lot from that coaching staff and also those players like Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod and everybody.
So do you have a Super Bowl ring?
Yes, sir. I do have some room.
That is fantastic.
You know what's great? So you bring, I mean, that is kind of cool, though, right? Like, you do have that, and you bring You were around it. You saw it. Because so many, by the way, Devontae, so many Broncos who are on that Super Bowl 50 team are actually gone. There's really not that many guys that have been through it. I'm thinking Troy on defense. What, Chris, Derek Vaughn, Emmanuel on offense. But, I mean, I swear to God, Devontae, it's only like four or five guys. And you. So
my friend, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I'm friends with Shane Ray. And he was telling me about the whole Super Bowl experience. And and Shane's a free agent now, so it's not to me, it's only a handful of guys left in that Super Bowl team.
I guess my bigger question to you is, what did you learn about how you have to do things to win a Super Bowl from your time with the Eagles?
Oh, that Eagles experience was definitely a learning experience. And I applaud those guys, how serious they take things in the classroom, starting in the classroom, and during practice. They treat everything like it's a game, treat everything serious. And after practice, the extra work they're putting in, like, especially guys like Malcolm Jenkins, I learned a lot just from watching him. And that's where it starts. It starts the seriousness in the classroom, in the film room, during practice, and after practice. They took that jump serious, and that's why it showed on game days.
Devontae, when you talked about wanting to, you had familiarity with Ed Donahue, the new defensive coordinator, and Coach Fangio. We've heard Khalil Mack call Fangio an evil genius. We've heard the new cornerback, Bryce Callahan, referred him as the godfather. What is it, if you can take us inside a meeting a little bit or practice, what is it that makes his defense so successful? That's what people are getting excited here, that because of the schematic changes he could bring. What is it about a Fangio defense that when you've lived it, that makes it so successful?
I like that nickname he gave Bryce and Fangio, the evil genius and everything. But Fangio, he knows how to use his guys. He puts them in good positions to make plays. And you know with a Fangio defense, you know you're going to get guys that's good to rush the passer. So in the back end, it's going to make your day even easier. I like his scheme. His scheme is phenomenal. And I know it's going to be the same thing or close to it. So generally then for a good one. And offensively, you know those guys are going to get rolling as well. So it's going to be fun.
Well, they play
fun times in different.
It looks like it's, when I watch it on film, and I'm certainly not a scout, but the read and react part of it as a cornerback that is really appealing because it gives you some freedom to make more plays. Can you kind of take me through that a little bit and how it frees up cornerbacks? And he loves to use corner blitzes.
Correct, yeah. So his corner blitzes or nickel blitzes, he's real big on that. Then, say if you're playing off man, the read and reacting, you know what the defensive call is, you know when you can go make a play or not as far as being aggressive and jumping the ball because you know you got some type of blitz coming or something like that. He's real big on just big defensive play calls, which means big defensive plays. So as a cornerback, you know you're going to have guys that's good to rush the passer and finish your defense. So it's going to be all out going crazy on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, we congratulate you. What an experience with the AAF. Back to the NFL for you. And hopefully a great new home here in Denver. Congratulations, Devontae.
Appreciate you. Much love.
Devontae, very nice. Great story. As we've had a great time, Brian, thank you so much. Have you been here all day? Have you really? Oh, my goodness. And to all of our promotion staff, we love opening day. We love everybody who's been here and saying hi. We wish it was a bit of a better result for the Rockies, with the Rockies down 10-4 to the Dodgers with one out in the bottom of the ninth. But, hey, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And we'll be down here at Blake Street Tavern throughout the course of the baseball season. So thank you for listening. The Drive Reloaded is coming up. My man Richie, thanks for all the help back in the studio. And to Troy Rank, David Dahl just hit a home run. Did David Dahl? Yes. David Dahl just hit a home run. Okay. That would have been really cool with the bases loaded. The Drive Reloaded, it's 10-5. Hey, you never know. Keep hope alive. It's Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.